All right, what's up, everyone? We got a special edition out in the field today. We're joined by my good buddy who just traveled to St. Louis when we held it down for us out there, gave us a nice spot to stay, Matthew Taurede of World Baseball Network. Matt, what's going on, bro?
I can't complain, man. Just happy to be back home. Actually was in Kansas City a few days ago for the double dip White Sox, Kansas City Royals action. Pretty nice atmosphere also at Kauffman Stadium, I must say, but it was quite an eventful trip. A lot of baseball history in both those story cities for sure. Not just besides the Cardinals and the Royals, but it all extends out to a lot of natured and pro leagues that were once at the turn of the century.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the Cardinals history. I didn't get to see the Royals, obviously. I saw in the Hall of Fame, they talked about the Browns and a few other things they had before they were the Cardinals. So it's very cool. It's a fun trip. We're going to try to put the listeners in St. Louis for a second. I got the Yankees and Cardinals hats behind me, too. Yankees got swept, though. There's nothing good to talk about on the baseball standpoint, except for if you're a Cardinals fan. But yeah, there was a lot of close games, a lot of decisions that have been questions lately, and the Yankees are still losing games. So I'm going to ask you, what did you make of the play on the field? And, like, just talk more about the experience of St. Louis.
No, just about the atmosphere. Obviously, the St. Louis Browns are now the Baltimore Orioles, and they moved from St. Louis to Baltimore. There were in St. Louis at the time. Let's see, a lot of history, like former players that lived in St. Louis, Joe Girardiola, Yogi Berra, and they were neighbors of Jack Buck. Jack Buck is a legend. Definitely goes around to like my top five announcers in the game ever, honestly. So St. Louis has a lot of storied history. Even showed up. They had the highest attendance rate on Saturday, 50,000. It broke all Busch Stadium attendance records for a sellout game. So it was amazing to see that when the Yankees come to St. Louis, unfortunately it's every 8 years, that they do turn out. They do turn out for pretty much just having the back of their team. It's just not even what about where they are in the standings. Attendance is always high in St. Louis, and it doesn't get unnoticed about the mystique that franchise has around all cylinders. Going into St. Louis in August, I mean, hey, you know, we were coming out of like a little stint at home, getting, you know, losing the series to the Mariners 2 out of 3. So it was a big transition from leaving the Bronx, going to St. Louis. What are the big expectations, you know, as a ball club to go into such a storied franchise is building? And to hear, you know, as many Yankee fans as we did see Julian in St. Louis, I felt like it was a pretty dominant circuit that Cardinals fans always put out for their ball club.
Yeah, bro. I mean, we saw some Yankee fans. We made a few friends there. The Cardinal fans were loud and proud, though, for sure. They were giving ovations for Carp, and you saw the stuff for Yadi and Pujols. Even Wainwright gets a standing ovation when he pitched terribly. You made some good points. The attendance was the best they had all year. And you're talking about two-story franchises now. Not everyone knows, but I'm sure most do. I mean, they were talking about the two most World Series, 27-11, and then you're talking about the most retired numbers, too. I believe the Cardinals are like right up there with the Giants in sort of second place behind the Yankees with retired numbers. So both the history these franchises have together is not greater than any other two teams.
Yeah, and meeting up in the World Series, too. The last time the Yankees and the Cardinals met in the World Series was 1964.
Wow.
And that was the year that Yogi was a split time player and a coach also during that time frame, but you still had Mickey Mantle, you still had guys like Elston Howard, I think Roger Maris, if I'm not mistaken, was with the Cardinals then in 64.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, you know, you got like a lot of connections, you know, between those storied rivals, those teams, the organizations itself. And also dating back to the 1920s, they've been in the World Series a few times during the Gas House Gang era. Roger Hornsby, Eno Slaughter, Dizzy Dean. I mean, just the magnitude of how these players played back then, and not the equivalent metrics that we're seeing now in our game, but definitely attributes to how good they were physically, and just being smart, being all around the tools back then. You had to know just a lot of scouting insight that wasn't commercialized as it is now, as what we're seeing with the exit velocity,
objects
and stuff, and the spin rate.
That's a good point. It's such a different game. So many Cardinal-Yankee crossovers is a great comment you brought up, because I want to talk about some current ones too. Like, we're mixing some past and present stuff here. One of the best Yankee and Cardinal crossovers is our man Joe Torre right here. Got that bobblehead case still. He was out there Saturday. We got our bobbleheads. He was in the booth. He was on the field. That was crazy to see. He was just, he's obviously a legend for both teams. He wasn't the best manager with the Cardinals, but he played really well for them with an MVP and a batting title. And he was a great manager for the Yankees, obviously. So, you know, it had to mean a lot to him to see two first place teams that he's so associated with play together live in such a setting like that.
Oh, yeah. Joe Torre is an iconic manager, let alone in who he was as a player. He just felt like he was a mentor, even playing. It's neat to see all those teams that he played for, the Braves. He also managed Atlanta in the past. And, he has a storied franchise, like, list to his resume. And being with MLB now in the Park Ave offices, it fits, you know, it fits him. It fits him that he is the state of baseball. And me, as an Italian-American, it fits all traits, honestly. And also, it's cool to see guys like him that are still giving back to the sport. He also has his domestic violence foundation that's phenomenal, and for child abuse. And it's a good circuit that he's still giving back. And he has a place where all of us as fans have cherished for years and years and years when he was with him.
Yeah, I mean, I still miss the teams he managed back when the Yankees were winning consistently to 4-5. And, like, they haven't really picked it up since he left. We only won one World Series, you know. It's his legacy is always going to be cemented as a Yankee and a Cardinal. And then those other circuits that you talked about, too. So let's talk about some more current things. Big crossovers, Montgomery and Harrison Bader. You have Gianni Gallegos, too, and then Matt Carpenter. Like, just a big culmination of former Yankees and Cardinals, even though Bader wasn't out there. Heard a lot of good things about him. I think Yankee fans will be excited. I know you've heard it all, too. So what do you think about the connections on the field with the former players and, like, current ones?
Matt Carpenter, standout player for the Cardinals, honestly. Had a lot of true veteran leadership, even from his first rookie season. And, you know, he played in the World Series also with them during his rookie stint and paved his way on to his full year stint in 2012. And it's neat to see a guy that is a utility player, but he's not just that. It's his availability that gives us so much depth to look forward to. Who doesn't like buying a ticket and go see Matt Carpenter? It's like, who doesn't like to, like, stay in this day and age? He may not be the Albert Pujols. He may not be the Miguel Cabrera. But he does it all. And even if, you know, he hits a few slumps, you know, here and there and certain courses stretch, like we were seeing about certain July 9th comments from our fellow people at Yankee Twitter, it's good to see a guy like Matt Carpenter take the field and just have a live presence that he gives to our ball club.
I know it sucks that he ends up getting injured after that. Like, he could have potentially won the game for him Friday if the Yankees didn't have some miscues. He just missed a homer too. Lars Newbart to the agony of us, making plays all over the field and, like, saving runs left to right. Like, really adored the Yankees side that weekend, and been a new chance of getting a little nauseating. But for Carpenter, I know it. It happens. I mean,
from 162 games, you know, you go through.
Yeah, for
sure. It's even down this deal. We got Boston for you know a few games this weekend, for three games. It's going to be a really pumped up crowd at Fenway to even try to knock us out of some type of home field playoff hope. That's
fantastic. Right. And, you know, whenever they play, it doesn't matter the records and stuff. And for Carp, he was just outstanding with 15 bombs. His OPS is, like, in the 1,200 range before he went down. Like, you have to hope he gets back before the postseason. But we'll look to Boston. It's going to be a fun series for sure. There's a lot of things going on there. I mean, the Red Sox are teetering on playoff extinction. The Yankees could knock the Red Sox out of the race in theory. They're like 4.5 or 5 out, I think, of that wild card spot. The Yankees sweep them. It's going to be looking bleak for them. But if the Red Sox win 2 or 3 or somehow, God forbid, sweep the Yankees, and we're going to be spinning and the Astros will have their home field. Yesterday, we got bailed out because the Astros somehow lost to the Rangers with Verlander pitching. That was a gift. I mean, you can't expect that too often. So they're tied right now. The odds are definitely the Astros' favor, I would think. We've spoken about this before, just based off schedule and how the teams have been playing. So it's going to be tough for the Yankees to get home field now.
It's also their division.
That too, yeah.
I mean, honestly, like with Houston, it's a course down when you have Oakland that's struggling. I mean,
yeah,
it just doesn't look fittable that Houston can't have the best record right now at this current time frame of the season. It's just like our division is so deep. And I said this before with the Orioles, even from like what I said before, like just on the cusp of opening day, they got starting pitching. I mean, they have certain guys that, you know, can move the baseball, you know, left to right, you know, up and down the strike zone. It doesn't go unnoticed with how spot their pitching is. And even though they did trade away Trey Mancini, they still have like key, you know, players on their team, like Rone Odor, for example, who's doing reasonable with us from the cusp of last year.
Yeah, and Allie Rushman's really good too. I mean, Feliz Bautista's really stepped in to replace Jorge Lopez. They're not missing a beat despite the deadline. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They're really making a legitimate playoff push here. Like, it can't be ignored anymore. The team is showing it for real with only around 50 games left. It's going to be fascinating to see if they can actually get a spot and get in, because it has to be one of the more unlikely playoff teams we've seen in quite some time if they end up crossing through and making it, just based off like how bad they've been.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Orioles, they just haven't gotten the monkey off their back since like 80. I think it was 83 the last time they won. So it's one of those time frames that Baltimore's bleeding for a championship. It's just, you know.
Yeah, the whole city, because the Ravens haven't won since like 2001. Actually, I don't know. I think they beat the 49ers, but it's, yeah, I was off with that. But it's been a decade plus still.
with the custom championship reaching in Charm City. But, just going back to like even like the top, you know, players in the league, like Yordan Alvarez, a guy like Byron Buxton, like coming out of nowhere with the seasons he has had in the course of his MLB career. He's just blossomed through just playing in almost 90 plus games and just having around 66 plus hits. And he's hitting a phenomenal 27 home runs. What more can you ask from Minnesota, just to see a guy like Byron Buxton like blossom this year, who I didn't even have a range of seeing that coming, honestly.
It's just a matter of health with him. I mean, I think he's always been good, but like he's got, even if he plays like 100 games, he makes an impact, like you're saying. I mean, the amount of production he gives you per game he's on the field probably is like unmatched by any other player right now. I mean, Aaron Judge is on that level, obviously, going for that 60 bomb. He has 45 already, hit another one yesterday, but the bullpen blows it. And we will transition to some bullpen problems, some Yankee issues, and then I want you to talk about your entity and then like your Kansas City trip a little bit more and like let us know what's going on with that.
I just think the Yankees got to really fill in a lot of parameters in the middle of their bullpen. I like Ron Marinaccio a lot. He pitched reasonable yesterday in Scranton. I was actually watching the Scranton game because we did play a day game out in Seattle yesterday.
Right.
It was a lot of lenient time to see some prospective stuff where I could have turned in to the Somerset game also. Just watching Scranton, a lot of cool talent. Ronald Guzman parked one yesterday. He went yards, so it was cool to, just see the talent that's still, like, there, even if they're not affiliated on our 40-man. And who else are the guys? Are we going to DFA, right, or promote now? And I'm just rooting for guys like Volpe deeply. I know we always talk about him whenever we past that topic and accomplishments and even what he did in the Futures game. And I just think he can fill a hole for us. I think there is a misshaped form at the Yankee shortstop position. since Didi's mishap is during the last 2 years or maybe the last full season that he played with us.
Yeah, bro, I agree with you 100%. Some relevant questions I want to ask. You're speaking about some guys. You said non-40, but I want to go to the 40. So Oswaldo Cabrera and Peraza, did Peraza play yesterday? And did you see anything from Cabrera that you think he might be ready for a call-up?
So I haven't. I only tuned in from the seventh inning on, and I would have to check in about other stat suspicion stuff.
Check the box quick.
Yeah. So I just, you know, had cusp like the last few innings of yesterday, but I could check on.
Yeah, I'll take a look too. I mean, I was just curious if you have what insight you have from AAA, because I haven't watched him as much. Like we have talked about getting out there too. Like it is something worth doing. Hopefully we can figure that out before the year ends. Hudson too, but I'll give you some information with Somerset. Davey Garcia is pitching tomorrow down there. I'm going to check that out. I'll get some looks at that, see how Davey's progressing, because he definitely has some new life, I think, after all the pitchers they traded in the organization. I think Garcia has a chance to step up. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but maybe next year he gets himself back together.
Oh, no, so I just hope he can pan out with his mechanics. I think he can be slider effective also on the path towards right-handed hitting especially. So,
yeah,
looking forward to see what he has. And, you know, Devi, I'm pulling for too. I guess we don't know it. What shapes through his mechanics, because he hasn't really pitched a full MLB stint.
Yeah. I have some information too. So Oswaldo went 2-for-4 yesterday. He was in left field actually. And Oswald is back and he picked up a hit yesterday. So the hand's fine. I know we got hit when we were in St. Louis. So I was wondering like how that status looked. But he's good to go. I know the service time date, which I believe we've spoken about, I believe it's August 18th. So maybe that's the day you see them make some moves, because you know how calculated they are with their service time, their options. That's why Abreu's here. So the Marinaccio, which we don't really like too much, because Ron was doing a great job. And I think it cost us in St. Louis, because you could have went to Ron Friday instead of Abreu maybe. And then Sunday they get rid of Ron and he could have ended up helping him too. I know Saturday he did a good job, but of course we didn't score that day. It was just a mess of mismanagement, a lot of mistakes, bad, no timely hitting when it was needed, except Sunday, I guess. But it was just rough, that rough series and the decisions they've been making. They just don't seem like they're winning decisions. Like, it doesn't seem like they care much about home field as we do, which is kind of aggravating to me.
I mean, hey, we know the inside. I mean, you know, we don't make the decisions in the front office. So we can't to what we think and, you know, within what we cover, it's just like I see the blossom of a lot of these guys that are more affiliated into their own comfort. So it's like when you don't have a season in 2020 and you sit back and reflect and, you know, you're probably playing in the alternate complex as an invitee. So a lot of these guys are still trying to get their feet wet that even, weren't even healthy last year for a duration of some time.
And that's a good point.
It's only going to take time for these guys to sponge everything down, even if it doesn't come into the playoffs necessary for the minor leagues within the next month span. I mean, you know, we have guys like Johnny Brito. Ron is equivalent to, you know, what we see. An MLB held pitcher in probably nearly half the league's teams, depending on what front offices are capable of going deep into an established, like, middle of the bullpen scenario for a majority of these games. And, you know, like, me covering the game and loving what I'm seeing in other parameters, it's just you got to go with what is the best for the organization. It's only going to be what you put out, the best nine on the field.
Yeah.
Time between IKF and Marwin. I mean, Marwin's a good utility player. He can fill in some type of, you know, role. It's good to see, you know, what the Yankees have. And I think it's like guys like Rizzo, you know, you need a clubhouse guy that can build that camaraderie bond for guys in the middle of the lineup. Once you have a healthy Stanton, a consistent Trevino, possibly, those are the type of guys that you want. Donaldson as well. It's good to have that fit of certain veteran presence in our clubhouse. it certainly doesn't go unnoticed.
Yeah, and with that being said, I'm really happy Rizzo returned yesterday. We're waiting on Stanton, too. We're going to hope Garvin's returns, like Bader, Zach Britton, all this stuff going on. And then I don't understand why Lucas hasn't pitched at all. Like, his spot's in question, but he hasn't been pitching. Like, and then you have the situation, like, the infielders, like you said, IKF is marginal. I think we can agree with that. I think we'd like to see more from his position at this point. Marwin is an all right fielder, but his bat's never really been there besides 2017. And we know what took place in 2017, obviously. So that's how I view that.
I mean, yeah, it's just one of those years you look at. You know, certain guys like Josh Reddick, I happened to talk to him a few months ago, and now he's comfort with where he is in his career. He just retired recently. I was playing down in Mexico with Cerro de Monclova for a team in La Liga Mexicana de Baseball. So it's kind of neat to hear about guys that were on that team and journeyed into their international parameters. And he was going to commit in playing in Australia this year for the Perth Heat in the Australian Baseball League. That's where Liam Hendricks is based out of. So he played a few years in Australia. So, I mean, yeah, it was a neat time for him to see, like, how good or, you know, did the abstract with cheating, you know? Like, were they that good if they hadn't managed to gain on, you know, certain radiuses of insight, you know, that maybe most teams didn't have or didn't, you know? We can't, you know, tell the whole mischievous stuff behind that 2017 season. And, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's cool to see what, you know, the trail looks in upon the Astros. And I think there is a potential LCS, yet again, matchup, you know, tale of two franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Astros team, well, not, I shouldn't say new, but in an organization-based league, since this is their seventh year in the American League, I believe, since the restructuring happened.
Gotta look. I thought it was longer, but I know they were really bad for a while, so I have to check to see when they switched over. But yeah, because like they had a 5-year black hole, like they were just terrible, and never, and they used that to get better, and then like it fixed them quickly. But like, it's annoying. I mean, they got to get through them. Hopefully, I could tell you they switched to 2013. You're not too far off, actually. It's like it's a little more, but like it's like 9 years. They just had a black hole for a while, being terrible, like mixed in with their switch.
Yeah, 4 years, right?
So they were really bad before like 2015 ish, basically. But like, yeah, that's who you got to get through still. At the end of the day, the Yankees have to beat the Astros, and we should want to have to beat the Astros after everything that's happened. Like, I don't want an easier route. Go beat the Astros and go to the World Series and then take care of business there, hopefully.
Roll the dice, yeah.
It's time to get through them. I mean, I'm willing to take that chance, but that's why I'm frustrated with the home field lack of urgency, because we've seen problems playing in Houston before in the playoffs, and they have had a hard time playing at our place in the playoffs sometimes. So you'd like to have the more home games. It looks like you were going to get it. You've taken your foot off the gas with some of these situations here, and you just got to hope that they can get back on track. And they showed some good signs in Seattle. Like, the starting pitching was there. Cole, Nestor, and Tyone all did well. The bullpen's been just a tremendous issue. Like, Loaisiga has got to get himself right. He wasn't great in St. Louis either. And yeah. I would like to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and also that, I mean, transition to Loaisiga, and he's got to get his mechanics too. Like, he wasn't hitting strike one. That's your best pitch as a reliever setup, man. You got to be equivalent to hitting strike one. Almost every batter you face, you got to throw your first pitch strike. And yeah, I mean, it's just, how many rundowns did we get in Tuesday night?
That was embarrassing. The base
running on the East Coast till 2 a.m. and seeing that product of baseball, it's like, you can't lose a game like that where you had less than two outs, so many situations, getting into rundowns between third and home.
Bro, you had four chances to win that game clean. You had, I think, three innings were botched and extras by rundown scenarios, I want to say. Am I correct with that? It's like two or three of them were botched by rundown scenarios, I think.
Yeah, some deal like that. I'd have to check it.
Yeah, I saw the videos. I was like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. Because I was shot out from St. Louis. You were in Kansas City. So, and another thing I want to say quick is Clark Schmidt's another person that should be up with the team too. And he's pitching tonight for Scranton. So I might take a look at that. On our off day, he threw 66 pitches last time. I think he gave up like one run through five. He could even be in the rotation. I mean, Herman's starting to get himself together. He could definitely service in the bullpen. I really feel for him because he's done everything the Yankees have asked him to. He keeps going back and forth. Like, they can't just keep him on the major league roster because of his options too.
Oh, no, no, for sure. And it's, I totally agree about the thing about like a guy like Herman is just, he hasn't proven to us that he can sustain 5+ innings in majority of the starts. He just can't do that. He just can't go above that parameter.
Like, once he gets to the third time in the order, like, all hell breaks loose. Like, he can go through a batting order twice, and after that, then you really got to start thinking to take him out.
I mean, yeah, but it's just like, what did we think about Nestor last year? Now it's he's showing a different level of urgency this year. And I think that's another key guy that kind of has that veteran presence attitude, but he's not a veteran.
Yeah.
In the league landscape, he's not a veteran, but he just has that veteran presence attitude. You need a guy like Nestor that can rally the, you know, guys in the rotation.
I agree 100%. And how do you feel about him getting pulled early in St. Louis a little bit and yesterday too? Like, I feel like they should let him pitch a little bit more.
That was on Friday night, I believe.
It was like 5 1/3. I think he had like high 80s or low 90s in pitches. Might have been like, actually, it was only 83 when they got rid of him, I think. It was not a high count.
Opportunity also to capitalize with like less than 2 outs, certain mid innings, you know, our score position less than 2 outs. But I mean, that's just one outing, you know, even if it's managerial to what our performance based is, right? It's one outing. If it's the first game of now, we're dealing with these series increments, you got to win 2 out of 3. There's no more down period of when I made this managerial decision and, you know, to the lack of us counts. Like, there's no,
I don't get why Abreu is the first person that touches the ball like after Nestor these last 2 games is blowing up in their face. Like, can Abreu pitch in a different spot? Like, if you're gonna pitch him, like, I don't know, bro. But go through your KC ventures and let us know your whole World Baseball Network. I mean, I know obviously, but let's educate the listeners.
All right, so yeah, my name is Matt Tallarini. My affiliate is World Baseball Network. I'm a chief correspondent with my entity, and the establishment started, the inception period was in February, actually, just in the cusp of the Caribbean series, the traction of the collective bargaining agreement, also that we were going through at the time with Major League Baseball and other parameters also that were in the CBA with International Baseball, with the World Baseball Classic. And it's been a wonderful experience doing this project for 2 years. And finally got implemented with several marketing correspondents in Manhattan, and just been having a blast with, you know, engaging on new news that I've been surfacing, and started my journey doing this during the course of the pandemic. It was just neat to see, you know, the landscape of where the sport was. When we didn't have Major League Baseball, we had other leagues playing. We had the KBO was on ESPN, the Korean baseball organization, the CBPL, the Chinese Professional Baseball League, which is based in Taiwan, was on other streaming platforms such as Twitch and YouTube. And yeah, it just kept building into this exponential rabbit hole into like wanting to know about other international prospects and other leagues that were going on at the time. Nippon Professional Baseball, which is the Japanese league, started in June of 2020 back again after their full season in 2019. And it's kind of neat to touch upon a lot of these fragments of these leagues, especially the landscape of technology that we're living through, and also the accessibility that we're seeing now when MLB had the realignment period of the minor leagues. Remember, even if COVID wasn't a thing, the minor leagues would have been what they promised in November of 2019 through the PBA negotiations, what the circuits were going to be for all those teams. We were going to have a Somerset season in 2020. That was going to happen. In case people didn't know that, prior to our AA Somerset team, we used to be in Trenton for the Trenton Thunder. And yeah, there was no other authorization of a lot of teams even getting notified. It's Staten Island Yankees. They had no idea that this was happening to their organization, even if they were, you know, into their affiliate deal with the New York Yankees. So, yeah, it's a lot of disparity of what has happened in our game, in our sport. And then COVID comes around, you know, you realign the minor leagues. COVID comes around, and then you just have a 60-game season. And it's just like, I don't know. When I looked at that season, there was so much uncertainty of a lot of stats. Like, Gary Sanchez was struggling for us at the time, but then you had less games to make up ground. And then he did perform reasonably in some of those games that he did have to make up ground. But then you don't really know what you're getting out of in the next few years of talent. You don't know what your landscape is because you do have uncertainties. You do have guys that were in the alternate complex. And for all these 30 organizations, let alone. And I just captivated on an idea that I, you know, stuck through with about blogging about all these other leagues, reconfining memorabilia stature of the winter leagues, as Julian can note, for my journey with Baseball with City International, which is a Facebook group that my friend and mentor, Rob Shadlow, had started and paved his way into, you know, segmenting to his endovers. But it's just been, you know, cool to note where the game is going, not just here in the United States, but all over the world, honestly, with other landscapes of talent.
Yeah, so we're going to rock down, but tell us about KC quickly. Give us a little summary about your Kansas City adventures.
It was neat. It was really cool to see a lot of history, a lot of neat baseball history in Kansas City that you first hearing stories. For example, the Kansas City at the time, which was the team that Jackie Robinson did play on, and players like Buck O'Neill, Oscar Charleston, who was an outfielder, premier and outfielder in the Negro Leagues, and Satchel Paige, who was a premier pitcher in the Negro Leagues, but didn't get a chance to play in Major League Baseball until the mid-40 cusp range of his career. So you just hear about so much history in Kansas City about what the Kansas City Monarchs meant to their city, and then let alone the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum was pretty neat to, you know, walk around. You see like certain artifacts of a lot of players. You get to know like certain people in baseball, like Rube Foster, who was one of the founders of the main seven leagues of the Negro Leagues. And you just cherish the history that can honestly bring you back in time warp, honestly, like a time machine that, you know, it goes into its own period with the Martin DeHigos, the Cristobal Torrantes, like Satchel Paige, like I listed before. There's just so much history within the Negro Leagues that the museum itself, there was a lot of cool artifacts that were neat in the Negro League Museum. It was very moving to see like a lot of, you know, former trophies, former tours that certain Negro Leaguers did participate in Japan. Also, they did have a tour in the turn of the century that was kind of neat that I didn't really know about with the Negro Leagues, that they did do tours out in Japan. So it was cool to have like a lot of confined history that this archdiocese group is still bringing to life. I mean, there's just so much relic and history that the Negro Leagues has with pretty much going about the history, and let alone a lot of these cities, they still have certain artifacts from the Negro Leagues that haven't been fully discovered yet. So I love to see in the next few years with other exhibitions that continue to grow for the museum. You know, I'd love to see, you know, what would keep enhancing the history of the Negro Leagues. So it's so interesting to keep noting about, like I said before, like a guy like Rube Foster, who created so many teams, even that based were based in the Midwest and on. And it was a very moving museum, I must say. And it was cool to learn about a lot of the greats that were held for the Kansas City Monarchs also in that particular class, and all the Negro League teams that used to be extinct. I mean, you know, happening before
the
fun. Yes.
You know, I wish I could have went if we were going to go and all that. I had to come home, unfortunately. I look forward to seeing it in the future. I know I got to get Kansas City off the list now. You just did it. So speaking of that, you know, the stadium hunt continues as well. Bush was my 22nd. I think it ranks as one of the better ones I've seen. I think it's in that 3-5 range from what I've seen. Like we talked about, I would put Camden Yards, PNC, and like Petco Park is some of my favorites, I would say. And then I really like the Braves new stadium too. And then I know the Giants are dope. But all right, so give us your stadium review at Kauffman. I'm curious for this one.
1-10.
Yeah, rate it 1-10 and how it stacks up against some other fields you've seen.
I would have to say like 7.7.
Okay.
I mean, Kauffman is a neat stadium. The Hall of Fame they have is neat. Royals do have rich history. In case people don't know, they've been around since 1968. They used to play in Kansas City Municipal Stadium before they moved to Kauffman Stadium in 1972. So a lot of mystique even traces back beyond the Royals, right? You got the Kansas City Athletics used to play in Kansas City. And then, like I said before, there's a lot of industrial panel leagues and Negro League teams that were in Kansas City. So Kansas City's a neat town, a lot of baseball history. Definitely recommend to take a trip out to Kauffman Stadium. They got like a lot of neat stuff there. They got pretty much, we know, the waterfalls that are confined through the outfield terrace, and they got a lot of standing room amenities too that are kind of neat for the fans. In right field, they had a cool restaurant bar that I took sights in, just seeing a little bit. You know, after I exited from the second game. So it was neat to see like a lot of differentiate stuff between Busch Stadium and Kauffman Stadium during the course of that trip.
Yeah, that's cool, bro. I know I'm going to have to do my spin on eventually whenever I end up out there. I'm happy to gave the listeners some perspective because not too many of my listeners, I'm going to guess, have been to Kauffman Stadium before. And a lot of people haven't gone out there. You know, it's literally in the middle of the country. It's not really close to anything. It was like 4 hours from St. Louis. It gets a little less because you had a good drive. But that's a cool trip that you went across the state and everything. You know, I was in the beginning with you, obviously. So I'm happy you got to go through with it. And I'm sure the whole experience is definitely very rewarding. I know I enjoyed my first half of that trip. So definitely happy to see you went through.
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely amazing opportunity to see where the game has grown for, you know, these particular corridors. It's neat to just see, you know, a lot of these chapters evolve. Like I said before, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Also, outside of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, you have the Kansas City Royals Urban Youth Academy. So very neat facility. They have a supplemental indoor facility also, and they have one little league field. One base Ripken League size field and 290 feet base end field. So, yeah, it's great to see what they're doing in the community of Kansas City, just outreaching from the MLB criteria things and what the Royals have been doing for the city of Kansas City, especially during this time frame, with the Urban Youth Academy and other main chapters that are in the city itself. So, yeah, no, it's great. It was a great experience for me. It was a great, you know, history, confined ordeal perspective of, you know, what to nurture from our sport. Trying to go back to the Negro League perspective. I don't know if a lot of people notice about the history that happened in the States. There was a lot of history in the Caribbean, and it just takes a very much circumference of our sport globally. And, you know, me being a big fan of where the international parameter is, it was kind of neat to see the artifacts that were there from the Negro League Museum through the Caribbean circuit. And Satchel Paige, he actually wanted to give a little quick learning history deal Julian, if you don't mind. But
Go ahead. Let's go.
Beach actually pitched in 1938 for the El Trujillo Dragons, based out of Santo Domingo, but they also played part-time in Santiago during certain stints. And him and Josh Gibson were upheld, you know, sanctioned to their own deal through the president at the time, who was named after the ball club, Trujillo. It's a lot of history that the Caribbean sacred with the Negro Leagues and those type of players that they had to play, you know, in these leagues. And if they didn't win, they would be held hostage for the next season to keep playing. And, you know, hopefully once they win a title, they all had negotiated standards of just, you know, wanting to play for more money because they didn't get paid as much in the Negro Leagues than they did in Latin America at the time. So just a lot of transcending key parts. I must say that international baseball does have this frequency outlook for our sport. And it shouldn't be unnoticed that the times we're in, what you've been seeing with my crowd, Julian, I'm actually going to hold up the Caribbean series, media pass. This is a tour that I really cherish a lot because this tournament has really impacted the roots of the game of where all these Latin players have cultivated to what we're seeing now in the major leagues. So you got guys like Salvador Perez, Ronald Acuna, Gleyber Torres, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., you know, Juan Soto, so many players that are transcending the game internationally. And I think much more people should appreciate come next year what the World Baseball Classic is going to be up at.
Yeah, and I'm going to get into that too. I'm going to share some coverage. Hopefully I can get down to Miami too. I know you're going to be in Miami, so we'll see if we can pull some strings and get myself in position to be in the box for that. Like, we're trying to strive towards that, to be in all these major league boxes, minor league boxes too. Just keep pushing the game forward together out in the field. And we have your World Baseball Network, obviously, Grunt Talks, all this stuff. We're culminating together. So,
all the projects, yeah. And it's cool to, you know, Archdiocese, a lot of this material with you, you know, they're going to still be me personally to list out a lot of, you know, of what's been going on with the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. So, yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but next month it's going to be in Panama, Panama City, for the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. And for the two main last pools, it will be the determined qualifiers to land in Miami. The first set of qualifiers are going to be before the Panama qualifiers in Regensburg, Germany. And those two qualifiers are going to either land in Tokyo or Taiwan. So, yeah, no, it's a cool time for him to be a part of international baseball. U18 is next month in Bradenton, Florida. Go check that out. The U18 World Cup at the WBSC, World Baseball Softball Confederation, is doing their event around. So, yeah, no, it's going to be a blossoming time period, and I'm thankful. You know, it doesn't go unnoticed. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I know you wanted to say a few things about the projects and confinement of what we're doing, but not all substantials. I'm very happy with the progression that the game's going to grow, and that's all I can go from forward on out, honestly.
Yeah, me too, bro. And it's all good. I know we're both trying to get in our information out there, and I think we did a good job. So I'm going to close down soon. I'll say a few last things here. Tomorrow I'll be out there to watch Garcia pitch, as I mentioned before. I'm still progressing with Somerset. You see a lot of transactions going on. Blake Perkins is called up to AAA, a player I interviewed. Sean Boyle, a good friend of mine, him and his father. Boyle gets to call up the AAA as well. I get to break that story. And then we're also getting Brett Beatty, who I just spoke to too. So I'm happy to see all these guys being able to talk to, get these promotions up. I know it was tough for me to lose Hayden and Ken to the Cubs and the A's, but for them, it might be better long-term. So it's tough sometimes you build these connections and the players are gone just like that. But I know it's part of the business, getting better at adapt and winning everything. That's why I'm thinking about Lucas Lickey. I know he might be gone soon. I get to speak to him. So I'm hoping that he could hold it down too, but we'll see, bro. And then I'll still be doing some Yankees coverage too. I'll be locked in for the Yankees Red Sox series. So I'm just trying to get everything going. I had to take a little lull because St. Louis wiped me out for 3 days, all the travel delays and the lack of sleep and the heat and everything and everything else that happened and Matt knows about. But it was a crazy deal for sure, but it's an experience I'll never forget.
No, for sure. It was awesome being in St. Louis. And yeah, looking forward to, you know, other upcoming events. I mean, you know, I'll be back in St. Louis soon with a lot of Driven Insight with my entity. But yeah, no, it was cool. It was a cool experience. You know, it only happens once every 8 years. We get to play the Cardinals in St. Louis. So
yeah. There is some good news with that, though. I think the new schedule change, we're going to be there more often. I think we're starting to play everyone. That's something they put in next year. And the schedule is going to be less divisional. And you're going to, I think you might play like every team. So we're going to end up there more often, potentially, which is definitely cool.
Oh, awesome. Awesome to note on that. Oh, that's really great. That is really great.
So we'll see next year how it looks. It's going to be interesting. But I'm excited for that because, like, it'll give us more diversity in the parks the Yankees travel to instead of just being so structured like American League and, like, one National League, like a few National League cities each year. So it'll be interesting. The future of this game is definitely going in a very good direction, I think. I know there's certain things we'd like to see change, how the MLB markets certain things and, like, how the prospects kind of seem like they're pushed to the back burner at times. But I think things are starting to improve overall.
Yeah, and you got upcoming international events that they're doing too. So it's going to be neat. We have a MLB All-Star Series event against the Korean All-Stars at the end of this year. We're going to be having games in Mexico City in the next few years, Paris, London's next year also, Cardinals, Cubs. So yeah, no, it's going to be a cool time to keep growing the game and implementing what the sport has in a global magnitude oversight.
Yeah, 100%, bro. I can't wait to do all this stuff. I know we got a lot of things ahead. For today, I mean, just catch me down in the field. That's like my new platforms I've been working on. As everyone here knows, Julian Guardi wants the Twitter and the personal Insta is Julian Guardi 11. Everyone knows where to find the podcast. YouTube channel, Out in the Field. It's Grow That, space everything out. And if you have a hard time finding it, search Anthony Volpe in there and it'll come right up. I got to figure out how to fix that. I was telling Matt. But if you search Out in the Field, space it out, and then you put Volpe, everything will come up flying. So at least that's the best way to describe the search, I guess.
Yeah, and go check out my website. It's worldbaseball.com/blog on any URL server. And we're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.
Nice. And then one last thing I'll say before we go is that I did write a piece on the Cardinals trip in St. Louis and Grunt Talks MLB. So everyone could peep that as well. I go into the experiences off and on the field a little bit. So Matt, thank you so much, bro. We'll be in touch. Of course,